Welcome to my Soul Life podcast. This is my playground and I'm your host, Susan Scollin. I believe that we can live a life we love every day. To do this, we have to go on a journey to uncover who we are on every layer so we can live our legacy now. Join me each Monday for conversations about following our soul's calling and embodying what lights us up so we can be even more amazing people. And each Thursday, listen in to the beginner health sessions for simple ways you can up-level your own health. Be inspired. I want to remind you that all the information shared in this podcast is my experience and the experience of my guests. It's not medical or mental health advice, diagnosis or treatment, and I would encourage you to seek professional advice where needed. Today I'm chatting with Amy Lee, and I feel really blessed to have been able to have this conversation with her. Amy Lee guides and mentors business owners and creatives using human design, astrology, and energetics. She's passionate about helping others create energy alignment and cultivate deep self-understanding and reverence by honoring their unique energy signature. I reached out to Amy late last year to podcast with me. When you go on a journey of self-discovery, there are many people you meet, some who stay and some who don't. There are also those people who have impacted your life, but they never really know it because you've never told them. So I wanted to let Amy know that the work she was doing in the world was important to me and had impacted my life. I wanted to say thank you, and if she felt open to it, that I'd love to podcast with her and share her magic out into the world. And she said yes, which was incredible. It took me a while to get myself organized, but here it is, an incredible conversation with a woman who's living in alignment and teaches us how we can all do the same. This is an epic episode, so grab your cup of tea, tune in, and relax. And Amy and I would love to know what resonated with you about this episode. So if you feel pulled to come and share, do that over on my website or Instagram, and you can get all of Amy's contact details via the show notes for this episode on my website too. See you inside. Welcome, Amy, to my podcast. It's so great to be spending this time with you. Thank you so much for being open to it, and I'm excited about what we're going to dive into today.
Hey, Susan, thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Cool. So I'd like to start the podcast with, what's bringing you the most joy at the moment?
I feel for me at the moment, I'm finding a lot of joy in spaciousness and flowness, and, you know, it's potentially the North Node in Taurus, you know, activating me, but yeah, I'm finding a lot of joy in having space and time, and not having the busy, you know, kind of life.
Mm. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are caught up in that busy life, aren't they? And it's like, you know, we call it like a badge of honor. It's almost become something that, you know, I'm going to throw out there and say, well, I'm really busy, I've got all these things going on, but are we actually aligned to what we're doing, or are we just doing things for doing sake?
Yeah, it's like busyness is a marker of success, when really to me it's like spaciousness, and the you know, the less I do, the more successful I feel.
yeah, I think we could all do more of that. Because, it is that spaciousness that creates creativity. If we don't allow for that space, we just end up in that, again, back in that doing state, as opposed to starting to create and be aligned to who we are and what we want to create in the world. That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
So can you take us back on your journey? Just come back into, have you always been into energetics? Was it something that you've always done, or is this something that's been new over the last few years?
It's something I've always had an interest in since I was a teenager, I would say, but I didn't really, it was like just a side interest, not something I took super seriously. You know, I was always interested in astrology. And so I would get, even as a teenager, I'd go and get like angel card readings and astrology readings, and I'd get Reiki and energy healing even as a teenager. You know, it's funny when I think back about it, because no one else was really doing that then, you know, none of my friends were into that. So always was interested in it, but then it was really in 2012, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, and that really changed my life. I went from being like a 22-year-old who was going out all the time and drinking and partying and taking substances and like the normal, you know, early 20s thing, to all of a sudden not being able to do any of that. Mm. And I became really interested in how autoimmune conditions manifest in the body as well, you know, so that kind of took me down the path of learning about energy. I started to get really into the work of Caroline Mace and her book Anatomy of the Spirit, like, changed my life at the time. And and then it just kind of snowballed from then. It was like, once I was in, it's like I was really in then, and it kind of became everything for me. And it was just a very natural but gradual progression into it being an interest and a hobby, to then all of a sudden being something, oh no, this is what I'm here to do. You know, mm-hmm. It took 6 or 7 years for me to really get to that point of being like, no, I'm meant to work with energy and energetics and astrology. So it took that kind of dark night of the soul. I don't think it takes that for everyone, but it definitely took it for me, you know, having my whole life change and feeling like I was at this, you know, really dark period. But it's worked out beautifully, so I can see the benefit in all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I meant, like, from my sort of postnatal depression journey that I struggled with, you know, there's a lot to be grateful in that space, even though it's hard at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So can you just expand just a bit on the, like, you were young, 22, living life, doing all the things. What was life looking like at that point? You talked about partying and all of that, but did you have a career path, a job? What was that looking like as well?
At that point, I was really confused about what I wanted to do, and I'd actually decided to take a career and a uni break, and I was working as a nanny, which I'd thought I'd do for a year. I ended up doing for 3 years. It was actually a really supportive time for me. I learned so much about myself. It was such a beautiful time of healing being a nanny. I was a nanny for a family with 5 kids too. So it was just like, before that, I hadn't really been sure what I wanted to do. I'd studied business. I'd then gone into studying social sciences and had not completed 2 degrees, you know, it was very, not sure. I always seem to find myself in roles, though, like, even when I was working, I'd just naturally end up in roles where I had a lot of responsibility too. So I always worked and was doing uni and, had a job where I was put into a position of managing, like, a before and after school care, which I'd just been doing because, like, a friend worked there. Had a lot of my career and jobs come through friends and relationships that I've had. I was really confused, and then that all happened, and then I studied fashion design after my diagnosis, again, something completely different, but that kind of led me into the fashion industry, and then I naturally kind of led into more human resources roles. I studied human resources then and more like administration and working really intimately with, like, the owners and the directors and CEOs of companies. So it was like this really, like, 180. There's no rhyme or reason to it, like, completely non-linear path. And I just seemed to always naturally find myself, like, pulled into things that weren't really expected. But at the time of my diagnosis, when I was sick, was very confused, didn't know what I wanted to be doing, and was definitely in a place of really, had really low self-esteem. And had a really difficult relationship with my body too. You know, I'd come out of a few years where I'd been, one, smashing it on the weekends, like burning the candle at both ends. But then during the week, I was like kind of a bit, not fitness crazy, but I, you know, there was a good couple of years where I was going to the gym nearly every morning. And then I was still going and doing a boot camp at night after work. Like, and I'm a projector too in my human design. So then I'd work like a 9-10 hour day and go do it again. And it was all coming from this place of not loving myself and wanting my body to be different and wanting myself to be different, you know. And I feel like that caused a lot of the dysfunction in my emotions, you know, that potentially contributed to the autoimmune condition. But very low self-worth, low self-esteem, and no clear direction at all of what I wanted to do. Felt very confused.
And what I'm hearing you say is, like, that you're a project, like you said, you're a projector, so you're not meant to work for more than 3 hours a day kind of thing on projects that are aligned to you. So here you are doing a lot of leadership roles too, and a lot of guidance for senior leadership, which is very projectory kind of space, but then pushing yourself on, at, you know, to the nth degree, that it's burning out your body.
Absolutely. And I'd always reach a point in those roles too, about over that 2 years. It's like I could sustain it for about 2 years and then things would start to crumble and I would start to feel the bitterness, projected bitterness. And I even said, like, my last two jobs in particular that were quite high stress, I even remember saying when I was exiting both at both times to my mom in conversations, like, I feel like I'm dying. Like, I can't explain what it is, but I feel like my body is shutting down. And I know it's to do with the work that I'm doing and the job, and I can't explain it because I didn't know what human design was then, but this isn't working for me. Yeah. And so I always thought, like, it's a new job. A new job's the answer. But no, it wasn't.
No. So can you walk us through what was the answer? Like, you've talked about astrology and energetics, and then when did human design come in? Like, when did that start to play a part for you?
So I decided to, in 2017, I'd changed into the last job I would have working for someone else. I'd started there and was about 6 months into that and had the realization of, like, this still isn't it. Something's still not, you know, not feeling quite right. I feel exhausted still. I know I was burnt out. And I'm a 5-1 in my human design profile. So I really like to study. Study, learning is, like, really energizing for me. And so I decided in 2017 to study astrology because, you know, I'd already done a couple of business courses. I kind of knew at that point, like, I think I want to work for myself. And so I'd already taken a few business courses and other things. And astrology just felt like something I could study for fun. Mm-hmm. And for the joy of it, and it wasn't directly related to my work or my career, but it felt like it would be kind of life-giving. So I did that, and then right as I was finishing that, those courses, those foundation courses, I found human design. And learning that, I think because I'd integrated astrology, like, learning astrology was quite easy for me because I'd been reading about it for 10 to 15 years already before that. So I had a lot of knowledge before I studied. And then it was the same with human design. Because I had that foundation of astrology, it's like it just kind of clicked in my brain. And that was the missing piece, though, because that really spoke to, like, the actual energetics and what it meant to be a projector and how my energy is different. You know, just hearing that you're different as a projector is so affirming, you know. A lot of projectors spend their life wondering, like, is there something wrong with me? Like, why can't I work and operate like the generators and the manifesting generators can? Mm. And then so just started to integrate it. So I was starting to do astrology readings, and what I did was just, you know, no one knew what human design was then either. I would have to ask people, like, oh, well, you know, and sort of talk about just the foundations of their human design. And I gradually started integrating human design as I learnt more and went deeper. But no one knew about it. People were coming to me for astrology readings, whereas it's totally flipped now. Everyone wants human design as the foundation now for me in my business. And then I went on to study different things. Like, I've studied breath work and energetics and stuff like that to help move into more of a space where I can support, you know, not just give, like, a chart reading, like, where I can actually help facilitate support and change for people.
Yeah, so it's an ongoing process, isn't it? It's not just come get your human design reading or chart or body graph and then or report, so many different terms you could use, and come get some astrology as well and then go off and live your life. It's not one and done.
People think it's this magic pill, right? I get the reading and, like, I'm done. And it's not. In fact, learning your human design, it will take you on what can be a really challenging experience because you're rewriting, you're unlearning everything you've learnt in your life. And it's not always, there's a process of death and rebirth that generally happens for people in the realignment. But everyone wants the end goal of the, like, I want the success and I want the alignments. Like, you've got to go kind of through the mud first, which human design will take you through, but it's not always easy.
Yeah. So how do you go through that mud? Like, obviously, you know, I'm a MG. So when I got that reading and was able to see that I responded, I could go, yes, I do. Like, and I get energy from responding to people and responding to ideas or responding to my intuition. But then it was about learning, for me, it was around learning that alignment. So is that aligned to me, or am I just doing it from an old story that I have, like of being seen and being significant, and that people go, well, Susan can do that. And so therefore I got like this external energy, which really wasn't aligned to me. But how do people then move forward from there? Like once they've got that foundation piece, what's the next step for them?
So I think really experimenting with your strategy and authority, you know, first should be the foundation. Ideally, you know, that is the, understanding our own authority is the greatest gift like that human design has given us all, because really the intention of that is to help us come into heart and body coherence. You know, our authority helps us bypass the logical mind, mm-hmm. and we can come into this place. They call it passenger consciousness in human design, but really it's where you're operating from a place where it's the electromagnetic frequency of your heart and your body are kind of guiding you forward, which is how we're designed to operate as nine-centered beings. And that's how we all can tap into our own receptivity, right? It's through authority. But also understanding your not self. That is a real, you know, starting to piece together, okay, those are the traits that I've taken on due to conditioning, due to how I was raised, due to my community, that aren't my truth. This is my truth. And these are the lessons I'm kind of learning through my not self. The not self can bring up a lot of things, like it can bring up trauma and stuff like that. So having tools, you know, it's not something we just learn about and we resolve it, right? I think there's a pretty big journey most people go on with whatever tools are available to you. Like breathwork's been a really big one for me, like using breathwork when I can feel a not self trait coming up. Like if I can feel myself wanting to create or put something out to prove I'm the best, right, which is my big not self, if I'm proving I'm the best or trying to compete or doing something because I don't feel like I'm valuable, like I feel like this thing will prove my value and my worth to the world, I've got to do it from that reason. Breathwork, tapping, like all the things, right? And also, like, you know, I think it's really important for people who do go on the human design journey to be invested in supporting their nervous system as well, because, you know, to me, the more I'm learning, the more I'm sort of seeing like how deeply that's connected with the not self and like the shadow aspects of the not self. And so it's this slow, gradual process, right? Yeah. It can actually be quite harmful, I think. You know, if someone, you know, I have an undefined solar plexus, for example, and if someone said to me, you know, Amy, you're in the not self of your solar plexus, you're avoiding confrontation and truth, but I've got deep-seated trauma from childhood that makes me feel like I can't express my truth, like that can be really harmful. So I think, you know, there's tools and there's a whole healing journey that we go on with these modalities. And approaching it as an experiment at first, what happens is it's an experiment and then you shift into your what's called your process with it as well, you know, but letting it be as light and playful as you can, being curious, not being too hard on yourself, you know, knowing that we all drop into our not self, like it's something we'll be working through for most of our lives. It's a very cyclical thing, right? You feel like you make progress and then you might come back around and there's another lesson, and then you make progress and then there's another lesson, like knowing that no one's in that aligned expanded state all the time, like we're human as well, right?
Being compassionate.
Yeah.
And it is that compassion that we need to bring in when we're starting to like push and go, oh, I need to be doing blah, 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 because then I'll be more successful or I'll have achieved whatever that not self theme is for the individual. And then that is actually can be our downfall as well. So then we can crash off the back of that. And then it's like bring in the self-compassion and go, okay, we can start again. And there's no harm in starting again. It's just playing with it.
And what happens is generally a bit of a natural progression from noticing the not self retrospectively, like looking back and thinking, okay, you know, and then there's a shift that usually happens for people where you start to notice it in the moment. Where it's, oh, hang on. And that's, you know, and not that it will happen all the time, but you know, you're kind of, it can be really affirming when that happens, when you notice it and you're able to kind of either stop it before or even just noticing it and watching it play out can be really affirming.
Yeah. And I do, like I talk to my clients about from a coaching perspective, you know, that awareness is the first step. And sometimes you're aware after the fact. And it's the same with being in your not self theme or being in your self theme, like noticing when you are, and whether that's after the fact, that's okay, because eventually it will catch up, and you, because as you start to notice it, you'll notice it while you're doing it, or you'll notice it ahead of time. And that's sort of the journey. It's you know, like you said before, everybody wants a destination, but we actually have to go on a journey to get there.
Yeah, and in human design they say it takes 7 years. They say it takes a full cellular cycle, which, so, you know, I think it's important to give yourself at least a few years. Like, you'll start to really feel it for most people after, I think, you know, you'll feel things straight away. You'll see things and how they're impacting your life straight away, but give it a few years. You've really got to approach it as a marathon.
And playing around with strategy and authority, they also say that it takes, like, you've got to give yourself 2 years just to play around with that component of it. So like you said, you'll see things straight away, but then it's around, how do I introduce this into my daily life? How do I bring this in as part of my decision making? And perhaps you can do that through, I don't know, food or exercise first, little low-hanging fruit pieces, and then how do I bring that into my relationships and my career? And so building that up over that period of time, like exercising a muscle effectively.
Yeah. I often say it's like you're building a relationship with your authority, right? And you're really building your capacity to honor your strategy as well, which isn't always easy, you know. But the experimenting is important. I usually recommend to people when they're just starting, like, go do the opposite and see how it feels, like, just for your own process and being able to actually logically be aware of, like, oh, okay, I didn't respond then. Like, I'm a generator and I initiated and that felt kind of icky, you know, and actually creating that proof for your logical mind can help as well.
Yeah, because our brains override things, don't they? And go, no, we need to do it this way. And then you're like, hang on a minute, that doesn't feel good to me. And it's okay to act from a place of things feeling good.
Yeah, and that's really the whole basis of why we've been given human design, to override the logical brain. Because, you know, they teach in human design, when we were seven-centered beings, which is what we were prior to 1781, we were designed to operate from the mind, and it was really integral and important in, I guess, you know, in relation to the scientific age and all the progress we've made as a species, right? But we went through this evolution, and this is what honoring our authority allows us to do, bypass that logical mind, because it'll try to keep us safe, you know, it'll try to do the smart thing, and that's not always the aligned decision or choice.
Yes. And I've certainly fallen into those, you know, traps of going, I need to make a smart decision here, but I think it's a combination of that smart and heart decision that comes into play. And sometimes it will be heart-led. Sometimes it will be a smart decision. That's okay. But finding that balance, or finding your decision-making process, depending on the degree of the decision as well.
Absolutely.
It's a process. It's all good fun. So how does, like, gates and astrology all sort of wrap in? Like you said before, you did astrology first and then human design came in, and it was kind of like, you already knew it effectively. Like, there were parts to learn, of course, but you already kind of knew it, and it all sort of tied together. How do they overlap? And I know they are one in sort of the same, like they're built, systems built on each other, but how would you describe that?
So human design, so it's based on astrology, the Hindu Brahman chakra system, the Chinese I Ching, and the Kabbalistic tree of life, as well as quantum physics, biology, and astronomy as well. But the way they relate, so essentially, if you look up your human design, you'll see like this body, it's called the body graph, and it's the shape of a human with all the energy centers, and there's channels and stuff that connect all the energy centers. From that perspective, it would look really confusing to, like, how does that relate to astrology? That looks nothing like it. There's actually another view that you can look at your chart in. It's called the Rave Mandala view. When you see that, you can see how it relates a lot more to astrology. But if you think of, you know, an astrological chart, it's the zodiac wheel divided into 12 houses with all the planetary placements activating a sign in a house, you know. What human design has done is they've divided the 12 houses into the 64 gates, which relate to the 64 hexagrams of the Chinese I Ching. So there's about 5 to 6 gates that break up each zodiac sign in human design. So the way I feel it is there's the zodiac energy, and then the gates are just a more refined impulse of that energy. So for example, you and I could both have our sun in Gemini, which in astrology would be kind of, there'd be a similar flavoring, right? It would depend on obviously like the aspects, what's going on with other planets. But in human design, we could both have our sun in Gemini, but we could both have it in different gates. Mm. Or we could both have it in the same gate, but in different lines. So then the 64 gates, which are also, which relate to the hexagrams, are each divided into six lines, which are a further refinement of the energy. Then what happens in human design, all of those gates correspond to a gate in the body graph. And so what happens is if there's a planet in a gate, it will activate, if there's a planet, yeah, in the gate in the zodiac, it will activate a gate in the body graph, which are all the different lines that connect the energy centers. And then if you've got two gates that connect to each other, you have a channel, and that's what creates definition in your chart, and that's what creates type. So if you have a channel that connects your solar plexus to your sacral, for example, you're instantly going to be a generator. You know, whereas if you don't have the any channels, connecting to your sacral, you're going to be projector, manifestor, or reflector. So that's where we start to get the type. Type came in later in human design, too. It wasn't part of the original teachings, from what I've heard. That was sort of like a later differentiation that came. So that's how it kind of connects.
Yeah, and it's like you just started talking about, it's an evolution. Like it's evolved, and it's evolved in, I think what I was listening to was, you know, human design came along, and then then the gene keys came out of that, and it was like, it's just this next evolution to get to know ourselves better. Is that how you would interpret that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think astrology does a really good job. There's still so much benefit in astrology, in my opinion, but human design then can come in and tell you a bit more about your own personal mechanics, how your energy actually engages with people from what they call like a mechanical point of view. And then the gene keys are beautiful. I love the gene keys. So they're based on the 64 hexagrams as well, and different spheres are different planets, and they have different sequences. So they give the hexagrams and the gates so much more depth.
Yeah.
The interpretations of the gene keys are so beautiful, and there's just so much to them, whereas the interpretations from a human design perspective, like, there's still depth, but not in the same way. And the gene keys language is just so beautiful too. Mm. The human design language is designed to shock. You know, it came through with a particular language, and they teach that the language is important because there's a frequency to the words, but it can be more shocking and abrasive, whereas the gene keys has like a softer, you know, there's still words that can be shocking. The shadows can be shocking in the gene keys, but when you read all of it, you feel so much more substance and,
I mean, they're quite loving, I would have said, the words, like encouraging and about being more... more beautiful, or a more beautiful version of yourself, kind of thing. This is the opportunity that you have with the gene keys. That's just what I get from just seeing some of the posts that are on social media. It's Richard Rudd, isn't it? Mm. So his posts and stuff like that, seeing all of those sort of pop up, and you're kind of like, oh, this feels really, to me, it feels that more loving space, as opposed to, like you said, some of the gates with human design, it can be quite direct. And then it's around, how do I interpret that into my own life? And you're like, I'm not quite getting this. And that's where someone like you comes in, because you can help with that interpretation.
It is. It came through, you know, human design was born through a man as well, Ra Uruhu, who was a manifestor. Like, he was here to shock too, you know, whereas you can feel the gene keys came through Richard Rudd, and even just his energy is so different and so soulful, you know. So but it can be strong, which is why it is helpful to have someone interpret it, because sometimes it's like the words are important, but there's more meaning to it than the one word is for the gate or whatever.
And I thought it might be timely just to give an example of, because you've done a reading for me, and I don't know if you remember it, but it was probably in August 2020, and you were doing, it was human design and astrology. And so we went through majority of the human design stuff first, which was really good. So going through the gates and strategy authority, that was really cool. And then we were about to wrap up, and you said to me, just before I go, I just need to tell you, or not even tell you, but just sort of say, hey, there's something happening in your home, perhaps towards the end of the year. And this is from an astrological perspective, and that you might want to just assess if the energy is right in your home. And I just said to you, oh, it's okay, we've sold the house and we're moving. And it was really interesting that you could see that in the chart, astrological chart, and then we had already moved through that. Like, it wasn't even going to be a thing for me at that point. And it was kind of ahead of the game. So I think that's, like, for me, it was really this whole, oh, you're on the right path. Like, just keep moving forward. And I can do that from an intuitive space around moving forward, but I can also engage into, again, someone like you who does these readings, or I can go and learn astrology and figure it out for myself if I need to as an MG to try and get there faster, all of that sort of stuff. This is the benefit of these sorts of tools.
I remember your reading. I remember that. And I remember you when you moved. Yeah, that's the beautiful thing of astrology. It can explain things that are going on beyond you. You know, human design and Jing He's are very much about, like, you and understanding yourself, but astrology can give insights into, like, the home or things that might be happening with the family or things that might be happening with your work or a partner. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes a little bit beyond just you and your energetics. Mm-hmm. But I love that. Were you working with your strategy and authority already at that point?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And I probably had been for about 12 months. I'd had my body graph done, or I'd done it through an online portal kind of thing. And then I had done a course through somebody else who ran a short course. So I learnt all of it, of course, on top of everything else. So it was like I was doing 5 courses at once, just kind of working through it. And that was, I remember saying to her, like, it was almost like my hand chakras had lit up as soon as I said yes to it. And so I was playing around with it. And then, yeah, just we had been. And it was funny, I really lent into it while we were on that trip. We had to sell our car. And my husband said, been given an offer on the car. And I was just like, oh, it didn't feel right for me to make the decision in the moment. And I just said to him, I need to sleep on it because I've got an emotional solar plex. Mm-hmm. I said, I need to sleep on it. But if you make the decision, that's fine. I'm okay with that. But I can't make that decision right now. And it was funny. Chris rang the guy back and said, oh, no. Then he offered more money. And then Chris said to me, this is how much he's offered. And I said, yeah, we can do it. So it was really interesting to play around with, yeah, my strategy at that point.
It's the power of waiting, isn't it? For emotional beings, the more you kind of wait, the more your entire other people are like, oh, what? Like, hang on, like, I want some of that, or here's more money. Like,
yeah.
I love it. Do you enjoy the process of waiting now? Do you feel like you've got a really good handle on that, waiting out your way?
I think it really serves me to do it. So sometimes I get a little like, can't we just get there? You know, that end goal kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it really actually serves me to wait, and it brings me a calmer energy rather than a frantic energy of I'm trying to get somewhere that is non-existent, right? Because otherwise it's effectively I'm walking myself to death because I'm just pushing and running and that sort of thing. So, I've really learned that it serves me to wait, and I actually am a better person because I do wait. Mm. I know sometimes that sounds counterintuitive to even my own self, but it feels really good to be able to just put some space between myself and the decision.
Mm.
It takes off the responsibility of it, yeah, and the power that it potentially has over me. And it probably comes from making a decision in the moment is more about fear, like that fear of missing out or fear of not, you know, especially when we were selling the car, like if we don't get this deal, well, we may not get another one, that kind of thing. But in reality, it was the right decision at the time. And I can see that repeated over and over. Like when we bought this house, it wasn't the first house we looked at. We got gazumped on the first house. This was the second one. Chris came up and saw it. And interestingly, he recorded a video, and at the end of it, he said, I think this is the house. And then he turned it down. But because I was in Canberra, I just had to allow him to go through his process and not push. And I did that. We then found another house, which we did push and try to make happen. Of course, it didn't happen. And then we came back to the second one. Mm-hmm. And it all just unfolded as it was meant to. So it's really interesting to look at the processes in retrospect.
I love that. This is the magic that's like available to us, isn't it? You know, the decisions that don't always make sense, right? Yeah. But you just end up in something better than what your mind could have conceived or expected.
Yeah, yeah. And I've had the realization that recently I had this whole vision of a future home, and it was kind of, we call it the Gucci home, or the, someone called it recently the hotel. And it was like this big, significant, beautiful, gorgeous home. But I've realized that I don't need that version of it. And where we are now is a version of it. So it's almost like I've got that home. And then I had this vision, part of that vision is this woman, older version of me, standing out there in the back deck, overlooking the pool, overlooking the ocean kind of stuff, really calm. And then I went, well, if I've got the house and we manifest from what we already, like from the future, like I already have that thing, then I already am that person. And so bringing that person in has blown my mind as well. And I'm like, okay, well, what do we want to create from here? Because we already are all of those things.
I love that. I love that. Beautiful. Goodness.
It sounds like you're interviewing me right now.
This is what happens with a projector. Sorry.
No, it's perfect.
We're not really designed to, like, projectors are very focused on the other, you know, and
Yeah. And is that why you're so good at what you do? Do you think? What would you say is your sort of superpower in your work?
Oh, thank you. What do I think my superpower is? I do, as a projector, like, we are just innately wired to see the others. So I do feel like I have more of a superpower in seeing others. It's not so easy for us to see ourselves, though. So normally we have to do a lot of work with people, like, to see ourselves and recognize ourselves. I feel like, based on my human design, I really like looking forward with people. I have what's called probability view. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I like looking forwards and sort of looking, being able to dissect, like, what's the probable sort of outcome with this and how can we get there and kind of work backwards. But no, projectors, and it's, to be honest, if I was doing anything else, my energy wouldn't be sustainable, right? Like, for projectors to live in a way that feels enriching and feels, you know, energetically healthy and sustainable, we do need to be in positions where we're more guiding others. Mm. If I'm doing the doing, which was what my career was, I always felt like I was doing the doing, we just get burnt out because it's not what we're meant to be doing, no matter how much we love it or we think we enjoy it, right? It's kind of the difference. Whereas for Manny Gens and generators, if you're responding and you're getting that response through your body, that's life-giving for you, you know. Yeah. So if you love what you're doing, there's going to be energy there. Whereas for projector, we can love it, but if it's there's not going to be energy.
Yeah. And I think you've structured your business in that way to support you as well. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. So as soon as I found out I was a projector, my, like, everything I've done since then has been around creating a business and a life that would support me and my energy moving forwards. And I already had clues. So even before I found human design, you know, I was studying astrology, I knew I wanted to be kind of guiding, right, in some capacity. And I had always found myself in those roles doing some kind of guiding, you know, just naturally. But I've really tried to structure it around, I guess, output versus input as well, mm-hmm. you know. So right now, you know, I've still had phases in my business where I've had to do work, like periods where I've worked a lot still, you know, but I'm very conscious of creating something that is not necessarily about my time for money. I think that's a big thing for projectors, you know, getting working to a point where, you know, there's things that you have that can create income that are aligned, obviously aligned with who you are, but that aren't necessarily connected to your amount of output. So that's what I've been consciously working towards for 4 years. And I feel like the last 12 months particularly, I feel like I've got to a really nice space with that.
You've really honoured yourself. I remember when I did the reading with you, you were like, I only take on a certain number of clients throughout a month. And I assume you still do that now. You really honour your own time and I guess your own creativity and what you can put out in the world.
Yeah, well, yeah, I have a wait list for readings and I would never do more than 3 readings in a day. And so I just can't comprehend how people do 5, 6, 7 like in a day. I just would be, but like I would be exhausted from that. So I do, like, even though that's something I choose constantly, and not that it has to be a choice, but you know, there can be times where there could be opportunities to make more money, and I'll only do it if it's also supporting my energy. I would never prioritize making money and booking myself out if I know it's just gonna, it's not aligned and not going to support me long term. Yeah. I think that's one of the big things I think we can all do, is focus on like what's going to be long, like sustainable over a longer period of time, because so many people come into business and do things and want to do it all at once and then burn out. So I'm consciously always asking myself, how can we avoid the burnout? How can we just create something that can just flow and feel good long term?
Yeah. And actually, funny, I was talking to someone this morning around, you know, like advertisements that you see out there where people are pitching, you know, have 5K months, 10K months, that kind of stuff, that it's all money driven. And I'm like, yeah, but that isn't necessarily sustainable. You can build to that point. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But understand what you need right now. And if, like, I've had a coach in the past where said that, and she was a six-figure coach earning, but at the time where I was working with her, I was the only client and I wasn't paying six figures to work with her. So there was kind of this mismatch in terms of what we're putting out there marketing-wise and then what is actually reality. And I think that can be reflected in any area of our lives, whether it come back to food and physical activity and how we're showing up in the world. What are we saying we're doing versus what are we actually doing? And having probably more honest conversations would be really supportive for everybody out there.
Mm, there's so much of that in the online space, so many cowboys and so much like smoke and mirrors. Like, I think this is, again, where your authority comes in handy, you know, and your intuition and just trusting your gut about those things. But people, we're becoming more aware too. This is the shift. Mm-hmm. You know, I think up until recently, people could get away with that, where we've gone through some big evolutions in consciousness and in our human designs, where we're becoming far more emotionally aware, we're becoming far more intuitively open and tapped in. So people can smell the bullshit now, I think, more, which is why like the embodiment piece like is usually so important in your marketing and how you sell yourself, right? Like if you're not the embodiment of your work, people aren't necessarily going to want to buy, you know, it'll be like there's something missing, right?
Yeah. And there will be something missing, right? Yeah. So it's not just the
You need to be the embodiment of your work. Like, particularly if you're in service, you know, and you have like a personal brand, like you really do, it needs to be in alignment. Otherwise there's something kind of off and maybe, the work's not quite correct for what you're doing or something.
Yeah, and I think that's really important around, like, you think just because your brain says you can do something doesn't mean that you should do it. That's where the misalignment comes, because you're like, well, I can work hard. Like, I'm a really intelligent person. I can push through. I can make these things happen. But then, like you said, you fall over because you're exhausted, or people aren't coming because there's some sort of misalignment. There's something happening that you're doing work that potentially you shouldn't be doing.
Mm.
Do you see that a lot in the work that you do? Sorry.
No, sorry, I cut you off. And no, I see that a lot. It's the frequency will be off and you'll attract the wrong people, right? Mm. So the way I work with people, in order to attract the people who are meant to work with you, you have to be the work, who you are, living in alignment with your design, the frequency you put out has to all be in alignment. Otherwise you're going to bring in the wrong, not the wrong people or bad people, just the people who aren't quite correct for the work. So it's imperative, in my opinion, having that, you know, and doing it your way. You know, there's a lot of, I think, emulation in the online space, and, you know, it doesn't really work, because when you're emulating someone else's energy, people can't feel your truth, right? So you're attracting, again, the wrong people.
And they're often a reflection of you, those people that you're attracting. So they're then emulating the wrong energy as well.
Yeah, and if like you've got, that's when you'll attract people who maybe don't want, who are questioning the value, right, or who don't necessarily want to invest how much your services are, you know, whereas when you're operating in alignment, like the people who are for you are ready to invest because they see the value in what you have to offer at that price point.
Yeah. Mm. Mm, it's interesting, isn't it? So how do novices, like people who are just, you know, tap into a bit of astrology, a bit of a human design from time to time, how do they keep up with all of the changes that are happening from an astrological perspective or the gates perspective, and even wrapping in gene keys? It's sort of like, I know that I can read some posts from time to time and I'm like, but what does this mean to me? Like, aside from getting a, obviously going and getting a personalized reading, what can we take out of those, or what's the best way to navigate that sort of space?
I think trust your intuition and don't overload yourself with that kind of information as well. Mm. Like sometimes it can do, you can do yourself a disservice. I think people can, by focusing too much on like all the details of what's happening, you know? Yeah. So just, I would say just keep bringing it back to your own strategy and authority and trusting your own inner guidance system. Like, and you know, if it is becoming overwhelming or if it doesn't feel applicable, just surrender it. Like the cosmos, the planets are always moving and impacting us. You know, we can kind of intentionally work with it, or we can just surrender to it, right? Yeah. And strategy and authority will always guide you through that in the way that you're kind of meant to. Yeah. The other thing, everyone focuses on the details, and it's like the details can be helpful, and then you don't want to hold on or cling to it too tightly. Yeah. Like collect your data and then come back to your body and your own intuition, and what do you perceive and sense is going on for you as an individual? Because no one knows what's going on for you better than you do. Even an astrologer or a human design reader, you know, there's things in your life, you know, the chart doesn't show life experience. The chart, you know, it kind of does, but not exactly, right? It doesn't show what your trauma is, what your past is, like in great detail. So,
yeah. Just says something happened at a point in time, and then you would give the detail of that effectively.
Yeah, it could have been something with the feminine, right? But like, oh, you know, or something, there's like an archetypal sort of energy around you. But no, so with those things, I think like horoscopes, like read them, but take them with a grain of salt and trust yourself and your own knowing.
Yeah. And that's where the free will, like we have free will, so we can read an you know, your horoscope and then go, yeah, that doesn't suit me, or it doesn't feel aligned to me. So just move on. And there's multiple people out there, obviously, that are doing this. So find the people that resonate with you, as opposed to just absorbing everything that's out there, because you'll get lost in the midst and get confused.
Yeah, absolutely. Find the people. Because again, there's a lot of cowboys in the astrology and human design industry, right? And so you're not going to resonate with everyone's interpretation. Not everyone's interpretations might be coming from a place of trying to help either, you know, so definitely be discerning about, it's like the food you eat, right? You want to be discerning about the information you digest as well.
Mm. I think that's a big one, especially around how we digest the information. But that's another conversation, isn't it?
Yeah.
So who have you become because you've gone on this journey of self-discovery for yourself?
Who have I become? I really feel like I've become like the leader of my own life. I feel like before going on this journey, I was constantly seeking like external validation and making decisions of what I thought other people would approve of, you know, just for different reasons. And I feel like I'm almost like a no fucks given person now. Like I'm really like, I'm just going to do what feels right for me, and I don't care what anyone else says or what anyone else does. And I think people look at me now and think, oh, like that's interesting. Like I probably look a bit stubborn now, but I used to be so, you know, malleable depending on who was around me, right, and what I thought they would approve of. So, yeah, I feel like I've become the leader of my own life and really cultivated like such a deep experience of deep self-trust has been really powerful for me, like trusting myself over even over what like my mentors tell me, right? Like I take everything in and it can help inform my decision making, but I always make decisions from a place of my own truth and my inner knowing and my inner compass. So yeah, it feels really empowering to know that, you know, I can trust myself in the decisions that I make and that it works out. I think I've been doing it for so many years now that I've kind of got the proof too, that I know how it works out and I know how it feels because I did all the experimenting, you know, over the last four years.
That gives me chills.
Yeah.
Leader of my own journey, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could feel that all through my body. That's amazing.
That's what we're all here to be though. That's the thing. Like that's what we're all here to experience and be the leaders of our own lives.
Yeah. And it's through that awakening, like as you said, the world is awakening even more, that this will come and deepen and then, you know, it just continues to grow, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
We're constantly evolving and growing. Yeah, you're right. It's like this, yeah, it's incredible. Excited to see now that we have human design where we'll be as a species in 50 years.
Yes.
All the children who are growing up with human design, like when we're living in a world where they're kind of in charge, like that makes me excited. I think we've got prime ministers and presidents who know their human design, like how amazing would that be? And know they're not self.
Yeah, absolutely. And are acting from that space as well. Like that's, it's just so much transformation can happen and so much positivity can come from all of that.
Yeah,
and the collaboration of that, because I know particularly in the States, there are companies who are integrating human design into their workspaces, which is huge.
It is so exciting. It just takes one person in like a leadership position, doesn't it, to like really start bringing it in. It works. Human design, there's a whole other side of human design that is tailored for the workplace too. So it's really, it can be really helpful for workplace dynamics, team building, organizational structure, stuff like that. I'm not surprised.
Oh, cool. Well, before I get into the wrap-up questions, is there anything else that you wanted to add before we dive out kind of thing?
Other than strategy and authority, I know I bang on about it, but if people take anything away from this, if you're new to your human design, just like don't worry about learning every intricate detail of your chart. Like that will come, you know, just simplify and let it be an experiment.
Yeah, yeah, and play with it.
Yeah.
It's always good fun.
Yeah.
So I'm a massive believer in self-love. What's one thing that you do for self-love?
I do a lot of, like, body connection. That's been a big thing for me because I had my past experience was being very disconnected from my body. So I do a lot of, like, things to do with like touch and like movement, like really embodiment practices. That's kind of my daily self-love practice, putting on like some beautiful music and like just moving my body however she wants to express, right? Like not trying to make it be pretty or like just let it. Sometimes it's literally just shaking, like whatever it is, but then bringing in touch, right? And just showing my love, like my body, physical love through touch.
Is touch a love language for you, like one of your
definitely major? Is I've realized again 10 years ago I wouldn't have said it was, like I was so disconnected from my body, but now it definitely is. I do things like massages. At the moment I'm doing saunas. Infrared saunas is one of my self-love practices at the moment.
So I love that you just shared that, like it's an evolution depending on how you're feeling, what you need at the time, and then you just let it evolve.
Absolutely.
Because we can get caught up in the whole it has to be perfect and it has to look a certain way, but what you're doing today is, like you said, certainly different to what you were doing 10 years ago and probably different to what you were doing maybe a month or 6 months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm receptive by design, so there's no rhyme or reason or structure to what I do or how I do it as well. It's just get up, flow with it each day.
That's cool too. So you've given us heaps of information here today. So if myself and the listeners were to implement anything from everything that you've shared in service of you, what would that be?
I would love to invite everyone to prioritize more of like your pleasure, prioritize more of your pleasure, your joy. You know, that's the greatest thing you can give to everyone, to the whole world, right? We think it's selfish, but it's not, particularly for the generators and the manigens. Like, creating time just to do more things that just spark life in you but don't make logical sense, right? Yeah. Like that would be the greatest service I think everyone could do for everyone.
Yeah, and just dropping out of the logical brain for it and just having some fun, playing with it, like you said, pleasure, joy, bringing in love? What does that feel like on the daily if you can do it?
Mm. Oftentimes the things that make no sense are going to be the best experiences, right? Or they're going to lead to the biggest integration. When you're like, okay, I want to do this. My mind, I don't know why. Why is my sacral guiding me here? This makes no sense. They're obviously portals to your biggest growth. Mm. Yeah.
That's cool. That's a cool thought, that they're portals to your biggest growth.
Yeah.
Good way to think of it. All right. So can you just share with us, you know, actually what you do in the world? We've talked obviously a lot about human design and astrology, but it's bigger than that. So can you, yeah, share with us what you're doing in the world and how it is best for people to contact you?
Mm, so I am mostly on Instagram. I'm amylee.co on Instagram. My business has a few different arms. So I, on one hand, do business mentoring and coaching now with business owners, which kind of weaves together astrology, human design, gene keys, energetics. I'm training in some different forms of somatics and nervous system care as well. So that's kind of like one part. I sometimes do readings. Again, it's really receptive and out of the blue. And like Susan said, I'll only open up like a few spots in a month when I can see their space. And then I've moved into last year, I started creating courses around astrology and human design. So there's also an element of me teaching astrology and human design now. Mm. I'm working on a few different things, like some sort of lower price point offers and products that I'm looking at bringing out in the next few months as well. So I'm trying to make more accessible ways for people to get the information, you know, if you're not ready to invest in a reading, you know, bringing out some other tools for that.
Yeah. And one of the business course that you offered earlier this year, you ended up running it just for projectors. In the past, mm-hmm. that's been done for any sort of type. How did you find that as a, like, separating out the projectors? Because I remember you saying, like, I think it was in a post where you're like, I wasn't planning to do this, but this is what I'm called to do, so let's do it and see what happens. How did that go for you?
Yeah, really good. So in the past, yeah, I've done a group 6-month like business mastermind that was all types, and yeah, again, completely unexpectedly. Thank goodness I have a really great business manager, because she knows, like, things just drop. And I create them really quickly and I'm launching them in like 3 or 4 days. Like, that's just how my energy works. It's you know, it's how my human design works. But no, it just dropped in, had no intention of doing it. I took a bit of a break in January. This is what often happens too. It's in the spaciousness and the break that the clarity lands. And it was just, it made so much sense. It was one of those things where I was like, why haven't I done this before? Why haven't I done it since I'm a projector, you know, and I've got that firsthand experience. So it's been really good. It's been more of a small, intimate group mastermind, small groups of 5 journeying mm-hmm. together through projector-specific business strategy. So it's been really good and really exciting. It's something I'll definitely keep doing a few times a year. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice. And it's nice that they're, like you said, really small, intimate kind of groups, because then you can really build that energy and connectedness between the people that are in there.
Mm, they feel like really connected groups, like everyone who's in them, they've all really connected, and it feels like perfect size for me as a projector again. Like,
yes.
All that energy management, right? And being in an intimate group of, say, 10 to 12 people wouldn't have been as sustainable for me to hold that. Mm. So.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for everything that you shared today. Thank you for coming on the podcast, and thank you for doing the work that you're doing in the world. This has been an honour to have you, and I've really enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you for having me. It's been so beautiful to chat.
Thank you for joining me today, and I have a couple of small favours to ask. If you love this episode, please share it with someone you love and you know the episode will resonate with. Also, to help spread the word about my podcast, please head over to iTunes and leave me a review. I love hearing your thoughts about my podcast and what's resonating with you. Plus, it helps us share my podcast with the rest of the world, which is amazing. Finally, thank you so much for being here. I'm super grateful for you, and I'm truly honoured you've spent your time with me. Let's keep rising, let's keep growing, because it's totally possible to live a life you love every day, right where you are. See you in the next episode.